cheers to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
I tried to put a little embarrassment into my performance of my own voice.
I could hear it.
Ben Harrison. Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah. I can't believe I haven't tried that before now.
Yeah, it only took us 400 episodes.
Now that Lower Decks exists, I'm like interested in... Like, am I a voice performer? Could we credibly get a gig as a background character on that show that gets blown into space? I would like to.
I think your chances are better than mine. I find when I listen to myself back again, I'm a little too slurry. I think I'm a little loose with my enunciation. I need to really tighten that shit up if I want to go pro.
That's because so much day drinking with you.
I know. It's become impossible to hide. Anytime you hear an ad break and it's one of my ads, you can tell.
Ooh, boy.
I've gotten into the bottle.
Adam is three sheets as he tells us about this food delivery system.
I feel like we've been on tour and drunk enough together where... I feel like I could ask you this question and I could get an honest answer. How do you know that I'm drunk? Am I very obviously drunk to you when I'm drunk? I feel like I'm a pretty good chill drunk. Like you might not know it.
Yeah, you're a chill drunk.
I'm not flipping over tables.
I think we're both like that. We don't get mean or punchy or sad or anything like that.
Look at us defending our drinking choices. Look at how healthy we are.
Yeah.
I removed the Shimoda box from my phone, Ben. If you've noticed me completely bailing from one of our shared tasks, a couple of weeks ago, I had an epiphany, which was, I don't think this is anyone's specific fault. So if you see yourself in this description, I'm not talking about you. But I would often, like when I wake up, I'm going to grab a coffee, I'm going to check my email. That's a normal way to begin a day, I think, for most people. I'd read the Shimoda box, and most of the time it was, hey, you probably didn't know you were fucking this up, but I'm just going to let you know how, in fact, you are fucking this up. And here's why. Love the show. I couldn't deal with that drag anymore. I got rid of it.
I never had it on my phone. I always have to launch the email program on my computer to look at the drunkshimoda@gmail.com. So it feels...
I like the intentionality of that choice. I felt like I automated it in a way that was bad for me.
I think it's good to have some boundaries there.
Yeah, you know? More and more. Yeah. I just want to talk about Star Trek with my friend.
Right. And it's not that we don't want to find out that the thing we thought was a miniature was actually CG or whatever. Like that, I think that's generally interesting information to receive. It's just not like the first thing you encounter from another human being in the morning being you were wrong about X is a drag.
Yeah, I think that's my point. I'm trying to deploy strategies that give me the best chance of having a not shitty day. And I think it's about stacking up enough moments that don't make me feel bad if I can possibly do it. Like avoiding opportunities to feel like shit. I'm not even seeking out things to make me feel good. I'm just trying to avoid the bad if I can.
Right. Let's start by not backsliding.
Right.
I mean,
I feel like this needs to be its own segment, right? Like a new regular segment where it's co-host therapy.
Yeah.
You know, I look at me. I just hopped up on your couch, Ben, made myself at home, and I just I just need to talk.
We put on the white noise machine so that my other co-host out in the hallway can't hear what we're talking about.
Hey, it smells nice in here. Hey, is that a candle?
Yeah, I lit a scented candle. I don't care for it, but it's good, you know, patient relations.
Kind of a lot of boxes of tissues around here. A suspicious amount of tissues, if you ask me. I don't think they're all for faces either.
Yeah. And, you know, when the pandemic started, we were worried that tissues were going to be next on the list of items that were hard to come by. And I mean, I don't need to tell you what would happen if I didn't have lots of tissues around.
You know what I like about your office is that you keep it playful, right? It's not just a waste paper basket. There's a little mini basketball hoop over there. So I can throw them away like that. Make a little game out of it.
Yeah. Don't shine a black light around that mini basketball hoop.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
Do you think there's a shitty kind of therapy patient that uses up a bunch of cry tissues and then just leaves them in a pile on the coffee table or on the floor? God, that has to be annoying, right?
Yeah.
But you can't say anything because you don't want to make them feel bad.
No. Not,
you think
not
you could pick
way.
Up your cry tissues? Larry?
Yeah. Ben?
Hey, Ben, I'm going to need you to put a couple bucks in the tissue jar just because I feel like you're using using more than your fair allotment of tissues, to be
honest.
There's
kind of an average that we expect of each patient. We build that into what we charge, but, you know, some people go a little over, and in your case, we're going to ask you to compensate for that somewhat.
That's a half hour Larry Goes to Therapy episode of Curb right there we're constructing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What am I doing paying for tissues? That's your expense.
I had some gum in my mouth. I didn't want to have the gum in my mouth when I talked about my feelings. That's a tissue right there.
Yeah. And then, like, really great casting for the therapist. Like, you definitely recognize him from something. You can't quite put your finger on it.
Oh, did he have, like, a recurring role on How I Met Your Mother or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I've always wanted to see an actor like that in a role like this. Wow, well, speaking of actors like that in a role like this... this is one of those episodes, isn't it?
Yeah, and a highly therapeutic episode. This is one we recorded just Lower Decks last week as of this recording, and I thought we were recording one Lower Decks and one Greatest Gen. So I watched this two times now.
Wow. 'Cause
I watched it again to get ready for today. And it is, it's a really intense episode. It also keeps striking me how much it has in common, like story beat wise, with episode 9 of Lower Decks, which is also about an extended holodeck therapy sesh.
Oh my God, therapy works. Guys, therapy works.
That's much jokier, obviously, than this. But I don't know if people listen to the hit Star Trek podcast, The Greatest Discovery, or are watching Lower Decks. But
well, if you're a friend of DeSoto, you're at least subscribed and downloading.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
That's the least you could do, right?
I believe so. Ben, let's get to it. It's season 7, episode 10 of Deep Space Nine. It's called It's Only a Paper Moon.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Rom is so nervous to see his son Nog. He's been away. He's been off getting his leg put back on, or his fake leg put on in place of his real leg. He's got like Luke Skywalker leg.
Real leg for my real friends. Stinky leg for my fake friend. I don't know how that goes. I just started something I couldn't finish.
Yeah, he really did not stick the landing on that. But I liked the try.
There are a lot of beats in this story that are just very sad. And it starts right away with, why aren't Nog and Rom and Leeta talking ever, really, throughout his recuperation? And recovery from this? The nerves stem from the unknown, right?
Right.
Like, and I think Lita's the one that gives this voice. She's like, you know, we haven't really been able to connect over the FaceTime.
She's been writing him letters and he's not writing back. She's been trying to respect his space by writing letters instead of calling. Because it's like a, you know, look at this on your own time. I didn't even turn on read receipts on this iPad thing, you know?
I don't feel like enough is made of Lita's stepmomness. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that could be a really interesting tension to explore, but very little of Lita's discomfort in this moment is constructed around the, hey, I'm your dad's new wife and I'm trying to have a relationship with you and I know you're going through a thing and just want to say I'm here. Like, it, Lita, unfortunately, kind of makes it about her a little bit.
I think that she and Rom just don't know what to expect here. And
what to expect when you're expecting your son to return from war.
Your wounded warrior. Yeah. Coming home. Yeah. Classic self-help book.
Yeah.
No, but I agree. I think there's an episode that we could have gotten that is the, what is the Rom Nag Lita family dynamic? And that could have been an interesting version of telling this story. But instead, we just get this like one moment. And I feel like what Lita is giving voice to is the writer's realizing like, oh, shit. Yeah, I guess Lita is technically Nug's stepmom now. So what does that mean? Oh, well, we only have three lines of dialogue for her character in this episode. So let's get as much of that across as possible, because we may never come back to this as a topic.
Nug's mom has got it going on, I'm here to say.
Nug's mom has got it going.
Yeah.
Everybody's nervous, Adam.
This scene does good work to foreshadow what's coming up next and how wrong everyone gets it, right?
Yeah.
Because Lita and Rom are guessing about what it's going to be. The rest of the crew has invested in how they believe it's going to be. They think gathering together outside of the airlock with a like fast casual restaurant birthday song, you know, as sung and clapped by the crew is gonna make him feel better, but it doesn't. The crew is doing some light bit work with Nog when he emerges, and I think we need to add maybe a lowercase b to the already existing rule of greatest gen, which goes like no bits on tips. Maybe no bits on returning veterans would be an addendum to that.
Maybe feel them out, kind of see where they're at with the injury that they recently sustained before you start going like, hey, strong as an ox, ready to get back to work, attaboy.
Yeah, ready to kick some ass with your good leg, Nog.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to step into that one.
I don't know what.
Oh, I did it again.
I don't know what the comfortable version of this is, though, right? Like, if they hadn't shown up, that's even worse. You know?
You got to be there. It's just making a choice of what you do once you are. And unfortunately, everyone chooses the same thing. Everyone chooses to give a little shit.
He is in no mood for that.
And shit isn't the right tone.
Yeah, he gives the captain his orders, which are to not do anything until he's healed up.
Medical leave? How could that be?
That leads to the like invite to party that goes over like a lead balloon.
Rescheduling a party in the 24th century seems like a far easier thing to do when all of your shit is replicated, right?
Right. Like, yeah, all the canapes just go right back into the replicator system.
Are those Valerian canapes?
I don't think anyone's making a cake from scratch, right?
Sisko's the kind of guy that would, but he would like cut an egg open with a knife and you'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? I thought you were a chef.
His fucked up carrot cake has like real big hunks of carrot in it.
Yeah, you're supposed to grate the carrot, Sisko. You don't cut little pieces out with a paring knife. Is this a wedding ring? What are you doing?
We get a very first blood kind of solitary walk to the door of the airlock here.
You You visiting somebody around here?
For Nog. It's pretty rough. He walks himself into theme. And yeah. After the break, it's no surprise that Ezri is going to be heavily involved in his reintegration into his old life.
We need to find an outlet for all that rage.
Have you ever made paella?
That begins with kind of a catch-up sesh. Ezri's doing all the talking. I think that is a sign of some trouble here. Nog is kind of looking out into the middle distance.
Yeah.
As Ezri catches him up on the tee.
I half expect Miles to start wearing a coonskin cap to work.
Right. And she does that like, so anything you want to talk about? And he cites specifically the fact that he is walking with a limp and a cane. And the deal is he has medically passed muster. Everything should be going great. But he is still in a great deal of pain. And when he doesn't use the cane, he's in even more pain. And this has been determined by tricorders to be something that is psychosomatic.
The problem's all in my head.
It's not that there's anything wrong with the leg. It's that there's still something wrong emotionally with Nog. So, you know, you'd think Ezri would be the natural person to help him through something like this. But I think both Nog is very hostile to therapy, and also Ezri does not seem to have like a good plan of treatment.
I agree. Do you think, and I think this is the right time to ask this question, do you think it's a mistake not to show the leg? Because we're given an idea that it's just like the other leg and it's fine. Like it should feel like normal, and what Nog is experiencing is a kind of phantom limb syndrome, maybe, but maybe right. It isn't due to the tricorders. But I wonder if they thought about showing the leg and decided not to for any reason besides budget.
Like, the scene where he goes to the Deep Space Nine indoor pool and walks right. around in a Speedo.
Is the suggestion that the leg looks just like his other leg? Because I wonder
how
much...
Yeah, it's biosynthetic. It maybe is just like impossible to tell the difference.
I wonder what that does to you as a viewer if you see it. Like if we hear that he shouldn't be having a problem, but also see that it looks exactly like his other leg, does right. that not help us feel empathy for Nog up front?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, he's clearly like super down, and it is a real different version of Nog than we've gotten. Like he's always been like like almost obnoxiously enthusiastic with the way he plays his character.
Did it almost look like to you that his makeup was a little different? He like more lines in it, maybe. Like I think they made him look weaker or more put on.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
The cane is going to be the representation of this problem and his need for it.
Wins. Fatality.
It's been 2 months since the siege on AR-558, we find out. And the early part of this episode is just about Nog like walking around in civilian clothes and feeling bad for himself. Like he's lying in his room 18 hours a day playing Vic Fontaine records to the point where Jake has to come in and like beg him to shut the radio off because he's just playing the same song on loop.
Enough is enough.
I think it's sweet that the crew wanted to give Nog a party when he showed up, but I think it would have been more appreciated to have his own quarters. Right?
If he was on a starship, he'd be in a bunk bed hallway, right? Like, he's just an ensign. Yeah. He's lucky that he has a double.
Do you think when Picard cranked Berlioz in Star Trek First Contact, you could hear it through the wall? the way that you could hear Vic Fontaine through the wall in this scene?
Yeah, that's what brought Riker into the room.
Bizet,
leave me alone.
Yeah. Nog doesn't want a doter. And this is another instance where, like, for some reason, Jake is bringing it with like two barrels, right? On the one hand, he doesn't want to hear this fucking song again. On the other, this is another expression of a friend doting.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that these were the couple of moments that they gave Jake, because Jake is in that scene at the beginning when Nog comes in, but he's like way in the background. Like he is a, you know, like, oh yeah, I know Jake. I know Nog from work. We're not super close, but I'll go be there for him when he comes back from the hospital. Like they're best buds. He should have been the first person to like run up and give Nog a big old hug.
For some reason, Jake isn't wondering whether or not he should sign the birthday card going around the office. Like, obviously,
yeah, is he
going to
recognize my name? We've only interacted a couple of times. I mean, it's been pleasant.
I think they do a good job with Nog. Like, it's seeing him outside of his uniform, I think, is another aspect to making him feel kind of weakened. And yeah. I think part of it is that he's wearing so much clothing. Civilian clothing makes him look even smaller than he is usually, you know?
Civilian Ferengi clothing that is specifically kind of dowdy. He doesn't have like bling the way Quark does. He looks kind of, he has grandpa vibes with the cane and the colors that he's wearing.
What was the word you used there? Dowdy?
Dowdy, yeah.
Yeah. If his clothes,
did somebody mention my species? I didn't think he looked particularly like a dowd. Then again, we can look like whatever we want.
Whenever anyone criticizes my clothing choices, I destroy all other clothing everywhere. And then I'm like, it's all I got. It's all that's possible to wear. What are you going to do now?
Now that you're naked, you have to dress just like me, or else. Don't fuck with me. My conscience went out the window a long time ago. I realized I could never get clean again.
You know, if you described Nog's clothes as gouty, it would mean that he had not finished putting them on.
Well, it was a very complicated build.
It's taken decades. Speaking of sleep, the next scene is where Sisko and Esri kind of do the download on Nog, and we learn that he's been sleeping just a very enviable amount, Ben. 18 hours is what he's getting. Whew. New person after an 18-hour shift, right?
Oh, man.
The bad news is that he's been skipping his PT, so that's a concern. And Esri and Sisko are the type that want to do something. Like, this is news that they view as actionable, but maybe laying back in the cut and seeing where Nog wants to go with this is a better plan, and so that's what they end up doing.
Jake has yelled at Nog, like, go, like, get yourself out of here, go rent a holo suite. And I think what Jake imagined Nog would do is not go listen to the same song just in a different room.
Right. The suggestion is that he blasts.
Yeah. Yeah. That helps everyone. But Nog goes and fires up the Vic Fontaine program and has him run through every arrangement of Paper Moon that he knows. And we get like flashbacks in this episode in a way that is pretty unusual for Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
The flashback to Nog getting shot plays when he's on his way to the Holo Suite. And later there's a flashback of Nog like lying on a bio bed in Star Trek caves in the aftermath of getting shot, asking Bashir, what's with this weird music, and learning about Vic Fontaine.
Did they use the same visual language for all the flashbacks? Because I remember a dip to white before the first one, and I sort of recall that being the only time they used that technique.
Yeah, I don't think they use it on the second one, but it stuck out to me because, especially flashing back to, like, that's, I think, a scene that wasn't in AR-558.
That's right, and that's why the language would be different. It's interesting. I had a very bad experience with a dip to white transition back in my corporate video days.
Oh, no.
Sometimes you just need to know your audience, and I thought that would be a useful transition for a project I was working on, and the client was like they had never seen a dip to white transition before ever, even though I felt like it's a thing. You see it all the time. You see it in commercials. You see it in mostly in commercials, actually. But
there's not a non-linear editing program on the market that doesn't have a dip to color transition in the default package yeah. of filters and settings that you get.
This was a transition I rarely used, but for whatever reason in this project, I felt like it was right. And they were like, yeah, what was up with that that mistake in that edit? It looked like something was wrong. What happened
wow.
there?
Wow.
I had to teach my client about dip to white, and then you can guess what happened next.
You had to change it to something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. Fuck those interactions forever.
No dip to white in a podcast transition, brother. Those days are behind me.
You've heard them all. Now, which one's your favorite?
So Vic does that thing that you really can't do, which is ask about the thing that's bothering Nog. Like, as soon as he walks in, he's like, hey, Nog, how's the leg? Not a good start.
But, yeah, he performs this Paper Moon jam. This does really work for Nog. We get lots of different shots of Nog sitting alone in the audience, like, really head nodding. I don't feel like they quite made the case that this is such a great comfort for him. Mm-hmm. Like, I think this is a really good episode and a really great Aaron Eisenberg performance, but I don't think that they quite justified the Vic Fontaine connection here. Yeah. Like, why the fuck he would care about this in particular?
Help me once when I was unhappy.
I think there are examples from television and movies where characters who've experienced great trauma latch on to unusual things.
Yeah.
And this isn't totally a crazy idea. I think it's a convenient one, maybe more convenient than maybe we'd like. Holosuite Rehab is going to be on the menu for him, and we get a really awkward throw to commercial at the end of this scene. It was very jarring to me.
This was the scene that ends with Nog saying, like, hey, according to regulations, I can have my yeah. rehab anywhere. How about I crash with you for a while?
Right.
Yeah, that does fade. Like, it is the rare fade to commercial in Deep Space Nine that doesn't leave any tension that would, like, have you come back to watch the rest of the episode.
I think the visual language of the Star Trek series up until now gives us a longer runway into commercial. I think part of it, it's related to the dip to white conversation we just had. Like, it's a strange dip to black speed here yeah. with the musical sting.
Right.
I thought it was unusual.
When we come back, we have a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
And it's
everyone besides Pat Buchanan talking about Pat Buchanan and how concerned they are about him.
Seems to be reading a lot of, like, Mein Kampf lately.
Right. It's like
he didn't learn the lessons of the 40s correctly.
And it also serves as just a beatdown of Bashir's Holosuite program preferences, like at Bashir.
How can hiding in one of Julian's adolescent programs be a good sign?
Hey.
He's like, you know, I could lobotomize everyone at this table and you'd never know it.
It's also not the worst program that I use in that suite. There are programs that he could be running where if we opened the door to the suite, urine would come flooding into the hallway.
It'd be like a ureic The Shining.
So there's some, like, idea of, like, maybe we should let him play this out. Like, maybe he's trying to, like, he's trying to seek a therapeutic result from this just checking out of the world entirely situation. It's a very different reaction to what happened to Barclay when he was really into the holosuite, right? Like, nobody tosses out the idea of holo addiction or anything. And I thought that would have been, like, kind of a fun element to bring into this, like, is like when do people in the 24th century think that somebody is using the holosuite in a pathological way?
I'm guilty of a terrible crime, Doctor.
This episode gives you enough time to think about it before slamming the door on that thought with the idea that Vic Fontaine is just different, man. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this program is unique. He is unique. His awareness of himself is unique in a way that sort of forgives the pathology.
Right.
Or not, if it doesn't forgive it, it obscures it.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that they also maybe, like, get out of that implication by bringing Quark to the fore and having him be, like, a giant piece of shit about who's going to pay for it.
Right.
like, I think that you can kind of, like, distract from one pathology by waving another one in front of the viewer.
And it's very generous of you.
So, somebody better tell Vic what's going on here. And it's Ezri to do that. Vic seems game to help Nog through his circumstances, and that's nice.
I have some ideas on how to wean him off the stick.
Okay, but don't push it.
Vic's cardigan here is the jam for me. Casual Vic Fontaine. Give me that action figure.
That would be a good action figure. That's a good cosplay to wear to an STLV. I would love to see you in a nice 1950s cashmere sweater.
And may I suggest you carry something with a little more style?
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pale, Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my late state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
Vic has been known to encourage the fucking with people who hang out with him on the Hollow Suite in his hotel suite.
Do I seem pushy to you?
But instead, the hang that Vic and Nog are having has to do with watching old-timey television.
Yeah, they're watching Shane on the TV. I loved seeing that dog in Shane. I love seeing a dog in a really old movie.
You know what else we need as an action figure? Noggle's edition Nog, where he's wearing his own sweater from this scene.
Yeah, that's pretty good. He cleans up nice, Nog.
You know what's fucked up about the Noggle's action figure is you get like a purple newspaper and a purple cane and a purple roll of casino blueprints.
The little purple cane does make fire.
Right.
You can light a cigar with it.
Nog is kind of a TV pedant, right? I kind of feel like he should have a podcast
from
what he's saying about the Shane program he's watching. Yeah. He takes a look at Shane getting shot and he's like, well, what the hell? He's not even grabbing a shoulder. He seems fine. That's not what being shot is like.
I wonder why Shane, of all the things that they could spend money to license, why Shane?
I feel like later on they make a comparison to the Rifleman or something as being a superior program. Mm-hmm. Maybe Shane rights were cheaper than Rifleman rights.
Wow.
And that's why.
Damn. Shane's like one of the most, I think it's a classic Western though. Like, I don't know. I mean, like you never know what these things are going to cost until you ask too. Like we got the rights for War. What is it good for? I mean, I don't want to say the actual price, but it was like, I was expecting it to be like $100,000 and it was like a lot less than I thought that it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's weird. It's weird depending on the song, that's for sure. And it's got to be weird. It's got to be a lot different depending on the show or maybe even the episode of that show.
So Nog is hanging out on this couch and he's like, this couch hang rules. Let's just do this forever. And Vic is like, no, man, I got to go. I got a gig tonight. Like the people need Fontaine and I'm going to give it to him. And Nog doesn't get this. He doesn't understand the show business rule that the show must go on. Vic can't leave these people hanging and Nog is like pretty disappointed, but he accepts the gift of a replica Errol Flynn cane.
You don't think there's an understudy for Vic Fontaine, right? Like Dick Fountain? Vic comes off as playing three-dimensional chess here, right? In a pretty interesting way. He's got tricks up his sleeve with the gift of this cane. Because on the one hand, Ben, this is the ugliest cane ever to exist.
It's beautiful.
It is really awful looking.
Reminds me of the Grand Nagus' staff.
What the hell were you thinking, Errol Flynn?
Yeah. Yeah, just an embarrassment of a cane. And also, it's super fragile.
Yeah.
You want to make it easily breakable.
Great, but what's it for?
Yeah, don't put your whole weight on it. It's Bakelite, not plastic. And Naga's like, oh, cool. I mean, I don't have to. And, you know, like this does seem like easing Nog into the idea of not needing the walking assistance.
They kind of float in the sound of RoboCop walking when when Nog leaves here. Like, what if that were what his new leg sounded like?
Oh, yeah.
What if you could carry a phaser in it like RoboCop? That'd be great.
Nog could shoot people in the dick all the time.
Oh, man. So many dicks.
Your move, creep.
In the scene that follows, we see the shift that Vic works. And it's date night for some reason, Jake. He brings, I think this is a bad idea for a date, Jake. Like, you're bringing Keisha to the club to hang out with Nog, who may not be your best friend anymore, just based on the evidence.
Yeah.
And puts her into a really shitty situation.
I'll be right back.
You got to get table service. I don't think you can leave Keisha alone with Nog.
That was weak, especially when Nog was telegraphing very explicitly that he wasn't really excited to see Jake. I mean, Nog and Jake did not have any reconciliation after Jake blew up at him, and Nog has given no indication that it's water under the bridge.
I feel like there's a social contract too, right? That I think you and I have both been witness of and party to, that goes something like, if you are including a third in your hang, you don't, And you're the one that knows the third, you stay mm-hmm. with the third. Like, right. you don't stick your wife with them, and they don't stick you with their weird work friend or whatever. Like, you maintain the familiar pairing.
Especially when the third is like, hey, I'll have a Makara Fizz, and your friend that you're trying to introduce her to is like, they don't serve that here.
Yeah.
You know?
For some reason, Jake doesn't see that this is going to be a fiery wreck as soon as he leaves to go get martinis.
Yeah. I like that Keisha appears to be a non-observant Bajoran.
Yeah.
She's,
I like that too.
She's wearing not religious earrings. She's wearing
that.
Regular earrings. Are you allowed to take your earring off to just like go be in cosplay for an evening if you're a Bajoran?
Do the Bajorans who wear the dumpy burlap costuming look at her askance because she's dressed great?
Oh, she thinks she's fancy.
Yeah, poor Keisha.
Yeah. She was in Starship Troopers, this actress.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Good pull.
I think she's in Clueless, too. She's like one of the high school students in Clueless.
As bad as Keisha gets it, for some reason, Jake gets it worse, because when he returns with the drinks, it is table flipping time. And when you flip a table, you want to use your legs. This is another example of Nog's legs being just fine. Flips right. This baby over, and then it's not just a table flip, it's a go-around.
Yeah.
Because Nog goes around the table and punches Jake down.
Nog goes full Vegas gangster.
Yeah.
On Jake.
But why don't we just go outside and talk about it?
And gets 86. Vic like runs off the stage and kicks Nog out of the joint. And Nog really expected to that Vic would have his back in this moment in a way that I thought was great. Like he thought he ruled the roost in here. He does not.
I love the transition here, because I had guessed that would mean Nog would be 86th from the Hollow Suite. No, right. We find Nog back in Vic's suite afterwards when Vic gets off work.
Yeah, and you know, when you get home from work, you're tired, maybe had a couple martinis afterward, super late, and you come home and somebody's watching a really loud, violent movie. This is a bad vibe, you know?
No, doesn't feel good. I don't think they're particularly good roommates.
No.
This Vic and Nog situation.
Well, Vic is starting to get like wrung out, you know. He's tired. He's never been on this long.
He needs a refractory period.
Yeah, he's like that Ripley clone in Alien 4. He's like, kill me.
the Ripley we cut from Nog to Vic, and Vic is just covered with hair and like a third arm and also naked.
Yeah, there's a nipple where there should be no nipple.
God, that scene was so effective. What a horror show that scene was. God.
I think that movie is, I mean, there are there are a lot of legitimate complaints about Aliens 3 and 4, but I think they're both pretty great.
That movie seemed to get right the wet hair horror of The Ring that would come later. Like that cloned Ripley in tubes thing, all I can think of is the hair and how much of it there was. And like that's a thing that Japanese cinema auteurs knew from the start. You get that hair wet. And that's a horror language right there.
Then that's that French director who did like Amelie, right?
That's Jean-Pierre Jeunet, right?
Yeah. Same director as Amelie. And I feel like Jean-Pierre Jeunet has like four films that are mainly about how gross wet hair can be.
Yeah, I mean, Amelie, that's like the B story in Amelie. Why is Amelie's hair so wet?
City of Lost Children, gross wet hair movie. Delicatessen, gross wet hair movie.
Oh, yeah, I can't think of Delicatessen without thinking of gross wet hair.
Yeah, and cupping.
Sick. This is the scene where...
Anyways, Nog sticks his fingers deep in a sack of lentils, and that's the therapy he needs.
Vic's like, if you're going to stay, you got to start pulling your own weight. Why don't you start working on these books?
Yeah.
And because Nog is an alien that specializes in bookkeeping, he's happy to do whatever it takes to stay.
I'm guessing that this is like the next day or so, but Esri comes in and visits Vic in the venue. Nog is not there. And like one thing I always wonder about is like how the holograms work. If Vic is in the venue room,
right,
when Esri walks in and
your player isn't in the same room.
Yeah. So the hologram is like convincing Esri that she's in a much bigger space than the holosuite itself. But Nog is also in that same two bedrooms sized room and can't hear her and isn't aware that she's even there. That's so wild.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, it suggests to me that you can be walked in on by someone if you're using a holosuite, if there are many scenes and many characters acting independently.
Knock on my door! Knock next time! Yes, sir. Did you see anything?
No, sir. I didn't see you playing with your dolls again.
Good!
I mean, it suggests that, like, if you were on one side of the thing and somebody else is on the other side of the thing and called for the arch, you wouldn't necessarily know that the arch had even been called for.
Right. Esri is pro-ending the program and gets into a little bit of a disagreement with Vic about whether or not to do that. But the realization of this scene is how constructive it is for Nog to have a project to work on, because this casino project with Vic is going to be the thing that he throws his body and mind into as a form of recuperation. But, yeah. I mean, he could have had a project outside the holosuite. Why didn't Esri see that as a viable option? Esri, bad at therapy.
How do you know that?
I told him.
I think it's interesting that she's kind of trying to pull therapy rank with Vic in this scene.
No offense, but you're just a hologram, and I am his counselor. I outrank you.
And fails to, mostly because Nog, like, holds the metaphorical revolver up to his head. He says, if you kick me out of this holosuite, I will resign my commission. And Esri's like, okay, wait. We don't need to get that extreme here.
There's definitely something between Vic and Esri. There's a sexual tension, I think.
Yeah. He's Sam, she's Diane.
He really gave her trunk space a nice long look on her way out the door in a previous scene. You know?
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh, yeah. Like, he did a full-on, like, wolfish look over his shoulder as she left.
Period-appropriate leer.
Yeah, definitely.
We get a pretty long montage of different stuff going on in the holosuite. You know, like, Nog working the books, him and Vic Fontaine opening newspapers together, the Vic Fontaine tucking Nog in after a long night of doing math problems or something. And at one point, like, Esri is like back in the cut somewhere deep in the ballroom that Vic Fontaine performs in, seeing Nog like, you know, glad hand with the patrons without the use of his cane. And you start to realize that this holodeck therapy session is actually potentially doing some good.
I think the distraction really helps, right? When you're not thinking about the thing that's bothering you, all of a sudden you don't need that cane. You're like Tiny Tim in Scrooged, where you're like throwing your cane away and doing like gymnastics moves. That's what we got here.
Yeah. I thought that this was an interesting sequence because the way, you know, they're roommates and sort of business partners at this point, but they sort of play Nog and Vic almost as spouses in a couple of these little vignettes. And I thought it was really sweet. I thought it was like kind of like a moment I didn't see coming, but really likable thing that Deep Space Nine did, to sort of nod at maybe an LGBTQ storyline before they had the courage to actually do one.
Right. Right. In which Vic would be kind of the daddy figure.
The zaddy.
Nog. There's a part of the montage of Nog's...
Wait a second. We can't go past that moment without saying, Daddy Vic.
Uh-huh. We can't. Glad we turned the pod car around for that. Had to pick it up.
Vic with two C's.
Right. No. Yeah. I get it. Nog is sort of becoming a quirk figure of the club too, right?
Yeah.
Like this is a comparison that I saw. Like, as he gains confidence, he's running the show in a way that is very familiar.
Go easy on the garnishes. People order a drink. They don't want a fruit bowl in the glass.
I'm with the other lady.
Rom and Lita come to visit him in holotherapy, and they have some good news of their own. Rom's gotten a promotion, and I mean, like, this is a scene that's about showing how much Nog has lost touch with what's going on in the real world, because like they had the party. Nog didn't even get invited because people didn't want to disturb him in his computer game. But the computer gameness of this really is laid bare, where he's like, yeah, we're earning tons of money in here. And they're like, yeah, like, but in game, useless money, right, Nog? And he's like, well, yeah, but...
This moment was sad to me. The idea of life going on outside the holosuite. I think this is our first taste of it, you know? Like, that realization of like, oh yeah, we didn't even think to invite you, but we've got to cover that up with the sense that it was just a spur of the moment thing. And
yeah.
And because you weren't around, you didn't know, and that's like, shit happens.
I think the thing that is hardest for me to understand about the existence of esports and like people that watch video game streaming online is that like never in my entire life have I told somebody about something I did in a video game and had it seem like they thought it was interesting in the slightest.
Oh, yeah.
When Nog talks to them about how things are going in the casino, it was that feeling all over again.
This is you'll never believe the game of Madden football I played yesterday. Like, it was,
yeah,
it was just one of the all-time great comebacks. Yeah,
yeah,
like no one cares. It's a guy who's into flight simulators. Like, is what it feels like to me, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
those are the stakes.
Right.
You have to be into the lifestyle to really get it.
I think people like a couple years younger than me have a totally different relationship with this than I do. And that's the thing that's like, I feel so left out of whatever is going on Twitch.
Yeah, it's not for us, I guess.
It's not for us.
Morn. Morn.
Morn.
Dude, sweet.
Morn.
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 You need everybody?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Esri comes in and is like, wow, Vic, like, game recognized game. This is working. You got this new casino thing going with Nog. Like, you're going to have him out of here in no time. And Vic is like, out of here. Right. Yes. That was the plan.
Yes, that is the end game we are both headed toward here. Ezri?
I loved this scene because I don't think we've seen Vic like on his heels like this before. He's always kind of like the coolest dude in the room. And in this moment, suddenly Ezri has the status in the scene. She's like the least likely character to gain status on Vic. I thought this was like one of the funnest scenes in the episode.
It gives James Darren a different gear too. Like besides cool big band leader guy.
Right.
Like, I don't think we've ever seen him doubt anything before. And so he's got to, in this moment, do the math on things.
Now all that's left is to decide when he's ready to go back.
What this does is inspire tough love time.
Right. Tough love time taking the form of Vic declaring to Nog, like, hey, like we're not looking at blueprints anymore. It's over. It's time for you to re-enter society. Look at you. You're walking around without your cane. Like, you got what you came here for. Game over.
I can end my own program anytime. Watch. And he does.
Yeah.
Pretty great trick. It's such a great trick that Nog doesn't quite believe it. Nog feels like he can turn back on the program if he just fiddles with the wiring a little bit. But O'Brien explains to him that Vic has free will. He can turn himself on and off whenever he wants to, which sounds very enviable for an older man.
I love the line, I'm an engineer, not a philosopher.
Yeah.
When they talk about that, that was great.
But Vic is also able to appear in the ready room of the holosuite, like the unmade up holosuite he pops into. And this is the centerpiece scene of the episode, this confrontation, because Vic stands firm. Like, the program isn't going to continue for the foreseeable. And it's a moment where Nog has to admit how much he needs it because of how scared he is. And he draws a comparison to the relative predictability of life in the holosuite and how unpredictable his life outside it has become, and how much fear there is in that.
If I can get shot, if I can lose my leg, anything can happen to me, Vic.
I mean, Vic comforts him by saying that, you know, you could be me. There's no joy in this life. I'm in hell.
Hey there, Pally. Listen, if your uncle trips across the plug that is powering this room, I'm out of here.
You think I like singing the same song 15 different times for the likes of you? Give me a break. I've blown my hollow brains out 1,000 times already. You don't even know it. You don't hear it, Nog, but I've jumped off of our balcony like a Groundhog's Day amount of time.
Nug's feelings here feel really authentic. Like, I was eager for the fray when the war started, and now like the realness of it has really caught up with me, and I don't feel safe out there. And I think Vic's response to this, saying like, being on for as long as I have, having experienced some life, makes me realize how important life itself is, and you are not living yours. You've self-checked out.
Right. This seems to be the thing that grabs Nog by the ears and gives him a good shake. This has broken the funk.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that Vic Fontaine knew anything about funk. Turns out he does.
I would never have guessed that he wasn't faking the funk.
This scene was a real reminder of part of what we lost when Aaron Eisenberg died. Like, this is his moment, maybe his moment of the show. This is his episode of the show, certainly. And when he walks out without his cane, it made me feel a lot of things.
Yeah, it was great. And I think a great showcase for what a talented actor he is. And then the next scene, I feel like also low-key a great showcase of that, because you don't usually get the tearful confession scene.
This scene sucks so often, right? When they bang the epiphany and the
immediate and
what happens
aftermath.
In the aftermath.
Yeah.
But tonally, I think they really nail it here.
Yeah. And he comes out to Quark and Ram and Lita and kind of lets him know what happened.
Are you okay?
No. But I will be.
And I think that that's a very hard landing to stick. And him going in for a hug with his family is a big moment for him. It's a kind of love that he was not open to in the beginning of the episode.
You know what I think really benefits this scene and makes it sincere without breaking the spell is that they don't cut to Nog's face in the embrace. Right. And yeah. I think a...
Oh, it's because it's in Lita's chest. You know, he plants his face.
I mean, there's no safer place on the station than being in those shields.
So he makes a return visit to Vix, and this is clearly quite a while later. He's back in uniform. He's talking about how he's on limited duty, but he's like getting back to normal. And thanking Vic, like getting pushed out of the nest is what it took for Nog to find his wings.
The gift that Nog gives to Vic is life. The gift of life is what he gives him. Your program gets to stay running, pal. Like it or not. I guess yeah. Vic could choose to turn himself off again if he needed a rest, but now he gets a 26-hour day.
But couldn't Vic could turn himself on too, right?
Yeah, that's what I have a question about is like, yeah. He could have been doing this the whole time.
Maybe he just needed somebody to tell him explicitly that he had permission. But this really makes his day to the point that he bursts spontaneously into song.
Yeah. Yeah, we get a big, long musical number into the credits. And that's our show.
Shooby dooby, do you like this episode, Adam?
You really want to do this here, now? Okay, let's do it!
I think the point you made earlier about this being a Reg Barkley story with a different face is a good one. And it was a lot of what I thought about when I was watching this. I mean, Reginald Barkley had a lot of problems that seem when you see how the crew treats Nog here seem forgivable or nurseable, or I don't know how I'm trying to describe it, but like
surmountable.
Yeah. And I thought a lot about that episode while I was watching this one, but boy, what a choice to give Vic Fontaine and Nog just an entire episode in which to play the entire story. I don't feel like you get an episode of Star Trek outside of like a Lower Decks where you, to the exclusion of main cast characters, just give the entire time to featured performers.
Yeah.
In the way that this one does. And I think I wonder to what extent this experience encourages more of that in the Star Trek series to come, because I like getting an outlier episode like this. And I think this proves the hypothesis of whether or not it can work, because it utterly did to me. I think this is one of the great episodes of the season to me. What about you?
Yeah, I did really like the episode. It's that rare episode that feels like the character growth undergone by a character was believable, despite it being like super, super hard, you know? Like,
yeah.
How many Worf episodes have we seen where Worf was a jerk at the beginning of the episode and like made a very fractional move to being less of a jerk by the end of the episode? And we're like, come on, Worf. Like, it's nice to see Nog actually like turn a corner here.
Did you miss Worf in this episode? Because on the one hand, I didn't, because as you know, I've sold all my Worf stock.
Sell.
Got none of it. Sold it at a loss, even.
I've been scooping it up. It's a penny stock right now.
But I wonder if there was a version of this episode where Worf was more involved in Nog's post-war recovery from things.
Right.
You know, if there isn't a... I mean, and And in the way that could backfire, like that could be an explosive moment where Worf is ringing the bravery and honor bell and Naga's just not having any of it.
Yeah. I mean, Naga's a lot of people he could potentially talk to about this, not least of which is Jake, who has experienced loss in war. Like,
right,
Jake lost his mom to a war.
Right.
Moms are bigger than legs.
Yeah.
You know what else are bigger than legs, Adam? Is priority one messages.
Are priority one messages bigger than moms, though? I don't know. I guess only if we have a mom message in there.
Well, let's go check out what we've got in the inbox.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first priority one message is from the crew of the USS Krub Kree. And it is to Nick Pon, a.k.a. Big Citrus.
Big Citrus, peel and peels.
Goes like this. Chula! We shot this probe through a spatime butthole. But what our theory presupposes is it's not too late to say happy birthday. We were going to get you a cameo from Ron Canada. But this will have to do since the town is still on lockdown. We're sending out a big 4-0 torpedo salute to our Captain De Citrus, the drunkest Shimoda we ever had.
Wow. Ever. Ever had.
Yeah. That is a message that was targeted, hopefully, for July 13th. So sorry about how long it took us to get to that one. And a good reminder, get out way ahead of it if you've got priority one messages you'd like to schedule for specific dates.
Nick Pond's birthday came and went, and he's like, where the hell is the crew of the USS Krub Kree? They usually get me something. What the hell is this?
Did they stop being friends with me and didn't tell me?
Am I not enough of a drunk Shimoda for them to remember my birthday? Give me a break.
What do I have to do to prove how drunk I can get?
There's been months of that proof between then and now, Ben. I feel bad.
Yeah. I feel bad too. But happy belated, Nick Pon.
You know who should feel bad? All of the people buying priority one messages. It's their fault. It's not ours. This is a very popular system.
Yeah, it's true.
Ben, our second priority one message is from Yagam Van de Berge. It is to Bene and Adam.
Wow.
Dear Ben A. and Adam, just a quick note to say how much I appreciate the good work you do with TGG. Whenever I feel down, you guys cheer me up with a great new episode of The Snow. Keep taking the piss out of Bashir for me. Cheers, Yagam.
Have we talked about the fact that Ben A. is what my wife calls me on the show?
Yeah, I was gonna bring that up. That's your pet name.
I didn't know that was public knowledge. Or did Yagam predict that somehow?
Does your wife go by Yagam on all things internet?
I have not noticed her using that appellation, but I'll ask her about it.
Well, I tell you what, there's no way your wife is Yagam because Yagam listens to our show. And as we've said many, many times, our wives do not.
That's true. Well, if you'd like to get a priority one message, get on it because they are filling up. I see priority one messages in March on our calendar here. So that's just a little heads up for anyone considering getting one. If you'd like to do it, it is $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And we sure appreciate it because it helps us cover the costs of making this show. And you do it by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
Gotta get that.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
Who's having more fun than Vic Fontaine?
Mmm.
He's getting his hopes up for a new casino.
Yeah.
As you know, Ben, a casino is a business that never loses money. You'd have to be just a colossal idiot to ever go bankrupt owning a casino. Just the absolute dumbest. Right.
Like the point of the stuff with the casino in this is that Vic is making money hand over fist and doesn't even realize it. He is like so checked out of even like looking after the business of the casino that he doesn't realize what a latinum mine he's working.
You want to know why? It's the assumption is that owning a casino is a license to print latinum. It's that easy.
Yeah, it is just that easy. You'd be a fucking moron to let one go out of business.
Yeah. So Vic Fontaine is my Shimoda. What about you?
In the scene at the beginning when they're waiting for him in the shuttle bay and the you know the airlock doors roll to the side, there's that one guy that wants to go into the shuttle and there's like you know 30 people that want to come out of the shuttle, and that one guy goes in the second the door opens, and it just really reminded me of like riding public transit, which I haven't in a long time because of the pandemic,
right.
But I really miss that like moron that does not comply with the social compact on the subway and tries to get on the second the doors open. It just really made me laugh when I saw that, and I thought that's like an extra that made a very funny choice. So
that was great.
My drunk Shimoda.
I noticed that guy too. Good spot.
Well, Adam, I'm gonna head to the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets, and get our board game going. We need to find out how our next episode is going to go. But first, let me tell you what episode that is. It's season 7, episode 11, Prodigal Daughter. When Esri returns home to investigate O'Brien's disappearance, she uncovers disturbing family secrets.
Prodigal Daughter sounds a little like rural juror. Prodigal Daughter.
Yeah.
Prodigal Daughter.
Okay, so we are on square 27, Adam. I've got...
we're on death's door, it looks like.
Naked now, right in front of us. And I'm going to go ahead and roll this a here bone.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Roll a big number.
See what we come by.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
I did roll a pretty big number. I rolled a 5. So we are now on square 32. You got your wish. We are not drawing a bath for the next episode.
I don't want any tub times. Not for me. No thanks.
You have so much shame. Unburden yourself, man. Just enjoy a weird tub hang.
The thing about the tub episode that I think of most isn't the nudity. Isn't the degraded sound quality. It was the heat. It was so hot.
It was very hot.
God, like sweat in the can's hot. Can't do it. Don't want to do it. Unless it's an ice bath, like some weird Tony Robbins ice bath dunking thing.
That square is not coming off the board, Adam. No matter how much protestation you put up.
Fine. All right. Fine.
The point is that some of these are bad.
I mean, you hear it all the time watching the news. The badness is the point.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Wow. Well, regular ep for you and me next week, I'm happy to say. And another opportunity for our friends of DeSoto to support the show. Because there's no episode they like more than a normal episode, right?
That's the top kind of episode. And you can support all of our episodes by going to MaximumFun.org/join. Set up a monthly membership. It's really easy. You're not going to miss the $5 a month, and you get all the bonus content, and you know that you're helping make sure that this thing gets to go forward.
Hey, where's my camera? All right. Okay, there's the light.
There you go.
Hey, everyone who supported the show during Max Fun Drive and then stopped the next month, I see you. Ben and I get the report and we get the graphs and we saw what happened the month after the drive. Like, I get it.
You snuck in, you took your couple of bonus content episodes you were interested in and then canceled. It happens every year. It's fine.
It seems like something I would have done. So, like, I get it. I get you're gaming the system. But your support means a lot in keeping the show going. Our now 3 shows.
Yeah.
Going. And if you can possibly help with the production, an easy way to do that is over at MaximumFun.org/join. So thanks for sticking around.
Another great support we get is from our buddy Adam Raguzia, who made all the original music for our show. Of course, he worked off of the original Picard song of Dark Materias, and we really appreciate it. Adam Raguzia now, great big YouTube celebrity, making easy and delicious meals you can cook at home on his YouTube channel, and teaching you all about food science. Go check out Adam Raguzia on YouTube.
He's promised to do the theme song and interstitials for the upcoming Greatest Generation Voyager series. So if you've got polls for him, I think he's accepting submissions.
Get at him.
We're the beneficiaries of the Card Daddy's help. In an official capacity, he runs our social medias on Instagram and on Twitter. You can find our official accounts there at Greatest Trek. And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that takes us home for dinner. So we can meet the family.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.